2%.
The 2%'s right over here.
Oh, hey, Jenna. I didn't know you shopped here.
Yeah. Anything to support local food. Know what I mean?
I definitely do. Though that's not the only thing you do in the name of Good Eats, obviously.
Well, true. I also host Eating Matters every Wednesday at 5 p.m., where we talk about food policy and how it impacts all of us. Be sure to tune in.
All right, gotta get the plug in there. I get it.
Yep, I'm hashtag shameless.
You know what else you can do to support the local food community, right?
Well, yeah. Make a donation to Heritage Radio Network, the world's pioneer food radio station.
That's right. And I gotta call you out on the whole local thing.
What do you mean?
Well, The Farm Report, A Taste of the Past, Japan Eats. Those are shows that take you around the country and the world.
I'll give you that. So how can listeners give their support?
It's pretty easy. Just go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the big red heart in the top right corner. It's pretty easy from there.
Thanks.
Today's program is brought to you by Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing, taking place on Saturday, June 18th at Nettle Meadow Farm. For more information, visit nettlemeadowcheeseandspirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, meadowcheeseandspirits.com.
I'm Mike Colomeco from Food Talk. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
I'm not afraid to die. Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are sitting in home state in LA, but I feel like we could be in Austin, right?
Sure, everybody says I feel like I'm in Austin right now.
I see the succulents, I see the Topo Chico. That's great. I'm with Brianna Valdez, founder, owner, taco visionaire.
Ambassador.
That's a much better word. Taco ambassador. I wonder, do they have state-to-state ambassadors?
I think so.
You could be
I've
one.
I've heard of it.
You could be one for Austin.
I should be one.
Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I myself am an expat from Austin.
Texpat.
Texpat. Oh, I've never heard that. How much Texas paraphernalia do you have?
Not too much. Just, you know, mostly like the leather-bound Texas monthlies are like my biggest, my prized possession.
Oh, really? A huge fan.
Yeah.
I love Texas monthly. Have they written about you yet?
Just a blurb. There's a piece that has been in the works, I've been told, but I haven't seen it yet. But the founder has been in a couple of times.
All right.
That's
I feel like
pretty big.
People in Texas love nothing more than to writing about, like, Texas things.
Oh, yeah.
They, like, that's, like, Texas number one than everything else. So we are sitting here in L.A., but you are from Austin originally, right?
Actually born...
From Texas.
From Texas, all over, yeah. My parents lived outside of Houston when we were born, but I'm a triplet, so we were born at the biggest next city, so that was Houston.
Huh.
And then we moved to Victoria, which is a small town in Texas, and then from there moved to Dallas area, then to San Antonio, then back to Houston area, where I finished high school, and then went to college in Austin at St. Edward's.
Wow. So you're like one of the very handful of people that did not go to UT.
Yeah.
But you lived in Austin. Mom cooked, dad cooked, grandma cooked. Where'd you fall in love with Texas food?
When I left.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, so you took it for granted.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was just kind of a, you know, on every corner. I thought Texas food was Mexican food.
No.
And a real culture shock coming out to LA and ordering queso and getting a bowl of cheese and ordering a frozen margarita and having everybody look at me like I was crazy.
And you've been here since 2000, right?
Yep.
So you take it for granted. What was that when did you first go back to Texas and you ate a taco? What was that like? How long did it take for you to get home?
Not long. I was going home pretty regularly at that time. And, you know, it hadn't been such a long departure from the food that, you know, I went back and said, okay, let's definitely make time for that. But the more time that went on, the more of an absence I realized that existed here, and for me personally, but for the city at large. And so I just would always check in to see, had anybody done it yet? I'd check in on the websites, the blogs. Nobody was doing it, and I waited for almost 10 years.
10 years.
Yeah.
I remember that, especially in New York, and then at times when I come to L.A., I'd be like, where are the breakfast tacos?
Yeah, where are they? They got to be here.
And it seemed, I'm sure it seems so simple to you, that it's like, how do these not exist?
That's a question that I ask myself over and over again, but it was a question I think so many people from Texas who have moved to other cities ask themselves, because again, something we thought was ubiquitous, but it's definitely not. So that was the bummer, but it was also the exciting part.
Did you feel that moment when you were getting started and everything started to formulate? Like, please don't let someone scoop me. Please don't let someone scoop me. Like, please don't let someone.
There was a mad sense of urgency. I mean, I just felt like I didn't know who I was up against, but I figured if I was going at and making them go for it, that somebody else must have been. I mean, I just couldn't imagine that nobody else was. So I remember another restaurant opened up downtown, and I was really bummed because I thought they beat me to it, but it was actually a bit of a different presentation.
All right, so for those who don't know, the Texas breakfast taco, some people may have had eggs on a tortilla in a restaurant or a hotel somewhere, but for those who've never had the Texas style of breakfast taco, what is it and how is it different from everything else?
I think that the best way to describe it is, the broadest term to describe a breakfast taco is simplicity.
Mm.
So simple.
Deceptively simple.
Deceptively simple.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Because you eat it and you go like, I can do this. And then
right.
You try and do it and you're like, what am I missing? What did I make a mistake on?
Yeah.
But it's like eggs. It's usually eggs and one other ingredient.
Yeah, that's how I mean, that's how we do it at home state. People get creative and want to have it the way that their grandma, their mother made it for them. So we let them add items onto the taco. And but yeah, we definitely want to present something really simple. And if you think about it, I think of it as a food that your mom would have made you with leftovers.
Oh.
So for example, like our migas, which is not a taco here, but it's a classic taco in Austin, the migas taco. So we serve three different kinds of migas, but they're scrambled eggs with crispy tortillas and onions. So, and cheese. But the reason why that dish was born is because moms or grandmothers had leftover tortillas from the night before, and it was a way to utilize them and make something pretty filling. So it's resourcefulness, just like a lot of the current food trends, you know, retro trends, going back to what people used to eat, and also making the most out of things that people may have thrown away.
Like yolk to shell type of approach.
Yeah.
When did this idea start to formulate? So you were in California working for Thomas Keller for a while, right?
Yeah, I worked for him for 4 years.
So fine dining to breakfast taco, the natural jump, everyone, you know. But I mean, I'm sure that for those who haven't been here, it's a tight space, but I'm sure his approach to like space and use and precision has helped in growing what is this like amazing taco joint.
Thank you. Absolutely. I call that time in my life my restaurant university. It was a really big learning experience for me, and I tried to take everything in and really learn everything I could. So absolutely, I think I've always had a love for hospitality. I was in hospitality before I worked for Thomas Keller. I worked in the spa industry.
Mm.
And definitely honed it with Thomas Keller. And then his partner, Laura Cunningham, is still my mentor. And she's really credited with creating the level of hospitality that exists at French Laundry. I remember she told me that she hired a ballet dancer to come in and work with the staff to help them learn how to move elegantly in a very small space, because the French Laundry is very small. So same here. We are 900 square feet, and we open every Saturday and Sunday with 17 staff members.
It's absolutely crazy.
We have four tables, and somehow we have about 500 people on the weekends.
And a line out the door, right?
Yeah.
So you've been open for how many years now?
We're almost at 2.5.
How do you feel? How was year one versus year two versus year three?
I mean, such a huge feeling to have such a place that continues to grow every month. It just when you think everybody's heard about Home State, that would want to come to Home State, there's another rush of people that find out about it. And then we have the thing I think I'm most proud of is that our guests that come back. I mean, we have some people that come every day, every other day, three times a week, four times a week. So our return, the amount of times that people visit us is pretty incredible. I think really unique.
So where did the original recipes come from? Were you a chef? Did you work with somebody? Where did you decide? Because, I mean, your breakfast tacos are not traditional, and like in some ways they have a lot of great toppings and the combinations. So where did you get started in saying, like, we're going to narrow it down, but it's going to be authentic and yet a little re-inspired?
Absolutely. I think that was the biggest challenge, to really narrow it down, because Texas has such a... has such a big story to tell, and a lot of versions of it. And I think trimming it and editing it was the biggest challenge. So deciding that I wanted to do not focus on barbecue, really focus on the breakfast taco. I actually was very lucky to have a lot of chef friends, mm-hmm. who helped me. We did pop-ups along the way and figured out what was the difference between Los Angelinos' taste buds and Texans' taste buds. What was the difference? What were some people going to be drawn to here that was not necessarily predictable, something that we thought from LA, from Austin? So those pop-ups were really informative and helped us kind of continue to trim things down. And then I actually worked with a French chef at the very beginning.
Really?
Who has an amazing pedigree. And so he helped lend a lot of French techniques to a lot of what we do here, which nobody really knows.
For your eggs and things like that?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
God, you gotta love that, right? Look at that smile. It's so awesome. And then, of course, fresh-made tortillas, which I think without those, why even bother?
Why even bother? I mean, I think my main goal and mission in life is to make the best version of itself, and itself being breakfast tacos and tacos in general and queso. You know, it's very simple, and you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who think they could pull it off, but really there's so much intention that goes into every ingredient, every process, and so that when you get your simple taco, it kind of blows your mind. I mean, I had one today, I felt like I was going to black out. It was so good. It was a trinity. It's so simple.
So good.
But it's just so good.
We'll get some of them at work at times, and I will start with two, but know I'm going to eat four, and do that thing where I'm walking to the water cooler and go, what's that? And then even like 2-3 hours while still sitting in the foil, I eat it and I'm just like, damn.
Thank you for bringing that up, because there's something that happens inside the foil.
I don't know what it is.
And I don't know what it is, but it's like a magic machine where it just thinks all the flavors and textures come together and create like the perfect bite.
It's like this like taco.
It's a taco
atmosphere. Taco system.
It's a taco system.
All right. Well, we're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna have a track from Small Black, and then we're gonna come back and we're gonna talk about how local obsession, expat home, and then your work with different bands and the Silver Lake Conservatory of Music.
Great.
This is Brianna Valdez from Homestead. And this is Small Black live on Heritage Radio Network.
So, oh, oh. International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
All right, we are here with Brianna from Home State, sitting in the clubhouse. Could be in Austin, but we are in LA. And, you know, I want to go back to something we talked about before, because what I love about your place and what I love about breakfast tacos in general is that they're so deceptively simple, but people have such a connection to them. I mean, I know that when I land in Austin, first stop is Tex-Mex. And I feel that you have created this place where people who can't make it back to Texas can, like, emotionally connect here.
Yeah. You know what's interesting is some people go to Texas, and then the day they get back, they come here to kind of make that connection. They're like, I just flew in, and my first stop was here. Because it's almost like a reminder that they're okay. Like, they're back at their home, which is now home for them. L.A. is now their home. But and they still have the connection to what is maybe the fabric of what they think of when they think of home, which is the food. And a lot of people have come in here and cried. I mean, when they first come to Home State and they realize what it is and that we are representing a place that they're from for the first time ever in L.A., I mean, people get very emotional.
Have you been here when someone... Have you gotten hugged? Has someone hugged you?
All the time.
That's so
hugged,
awesome.
Thanked. People are just so glad that someone finally did it. It's only a matter of time. But yeah, people get really emotional, and it's validating.
You know, it's funny because people put all the stake put all these accolades on fine dining, which is right place, right time. But I don't know. You find a place like this, and you go like, I just want this in my life all the time. And I mean,
that makes me really happy to hear, because I do think that there is a time and place for fine dining, and that's definitely where I've learned so much from, and I think it informs casual dining and makes casual dining better. Once you have kind of, my goal was to bring the hospitality of fine dining to a really casual setting and bring the care of ingredients and the preparation of ingredients from a fine dining setting into a casual setting and present it at a really casual price and a really casual vibe in a place where you order the counter and you get your food brought to you, but after that you really feel cared for. And I think that, you know, it's not something that many people get to access. Not many people get to access true hospitality, especially if you live in LA and you're just trying to get food. But here you can get food and you can feel really taken care of. So that's my, you know, I think to bridge those two worlds is the ultimate.
It's like a warm tortilla security blanket. Right?
Oh, we're not going to eat cheese.
So when people have this much of an emotional connection, I'm assuming that they get obsessed with, like, a specific type of taco.
Yeah, there are some pretty strong allegiances. I mean, I've said this before, like, we should have team T-shirts, like Team Blanco. You would be Team Migas.
I would be Team Migas. I think that, you know, when I was living in Austin, I didn't discover Migas until a week before I left.
No.
And which is great, because I think I would have left like like 20 pounds. That's when I was living there. But now when I go back, I crave it. What team would you be on?
It depends on the week. Right. I spend a lot of weeks now on Team Natchez, which is I do a black bean and egg and cheese, and it's just so easy and simple. But today I had a Trinity, and I almost blacked out. It was so good. So I think I need to go back to Team Trinity for a while.
I mean, I know that when we'll get these at work, and I'll have like two. I'll get three of a kind to start. Okay, well, yeah, I was gonna say two of a kind, but who am I kidding? I'll get three of a kind to start, and then I'll let like the one I enjoy the most to dictate the one that I get like 2 or 3 hours later, which is still absolutely incredible and sometimes even better, like
sometimes
wrapped
better.
It's like that taco ecosystem atmosphere.
I heard a guy the other day telling his friend that he had a potato taco in his pocket all afternoon the day before, and it was still good at the end of the day, and so he was back the next day for another one.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, oftentimes my sister, who comes here almost every day, Andy, she almost always has a taco in her purse.
Oh my God, that's a good. I feel like instead of having like smartphone chargers, they should have like an area to fit one perfectly wrapped breakfast taco.
That's a good call.
So in addition to offering people a home or a place of comfort, you also do some community work with the Silver Lake Conservatory of Music, right?
Yes, we partnered with them. We really wanted to support our community and thought they were a perfect fit for us because, you know, Austin being the music, having the music focus that it does, and home state is a home to so many great musicians and artists. So we thought, why don't we partner up with different bands or musicians, allow them to create something that they love, and let them share that with their community. They get to name it as well.
So awesome.
And then proceeds go to support the Silver Lake Conservatory Scholarship Program. So we're supporting students who otherwise wouldn't be able to go there. So, you know, I think everybody has really enjoyed being a part of it. It's good old fashioned fun.
Who was the first one to do one?
Spoon. So Britt Daniels created it.
Texas Boys.
Texas
Perfect.
Boys, yeah.
Do they come? Were they fans first?
Yeah, Britt's been coming for a very long time.
Oh, Britt. So. Just good old Britt.
Yeah.
What does he eat? What's his favorite?
He created the Migas taco, something that he felt was lacking on the menu. We have Migas, but something that you see in Austin all the time is the Migas taco. We have this Migas add tortillas. You can make your own tacos.
I'll shout out El Cholito in Austin.
Yeah.
Because that was the first time I had a Migas taco. With that roasted tomato salsa.
That's one of my favorite spots in Austin.
It's
sure.
So good.
Yeah.
It's
classic.
I've stuffed myself silly on that back porch. And like with all the gas of the Topo Chico as well, I'm just like, oh, I can't move. And so then you've also worked with Questlove, right?
Yep, Questlove, Cold War Kids, Cherry Glazer. Right now we are working with Silver Sun Pickups.
Hometown Heroes.
So really, yeah, it's just so nice because again, they're such a part of the community.
And that's the wild kind, correct?
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing.
And I heard a rumor that if you know what's in them and know how to order them, secret menu, get them anytime.
Depending on the day.
I mean, it's not. I don't want to make I won't make any promises for people listening because it is a small space.
Yeah, thank you.
I feel like you should do like a taco compilation of like greatest hit tacos.
Well, you know what? Actually, we have had some people create playlists for us. Like Britt created a playlist to go along with his taco. Silver Sun Pickups just DJed on the launch of their taco date, and so really, like, really blending the music and the food together is just so fun.
I feel like unless it was like a short punk song, I don't think I would. If you put a breakfast and taco in front of me, it would last the length of any song. Not even a whole playlist, unless I was like stuffing myself. So what's next? The lines that here are awesome on the weekends, big and awesome. You guys deliver. Next location, number two.
We signed our second lease, which was I really took my time with, just to make sure we were ready and to find the right next home. And so we're going to be opening up in Highland Park at the end of this year.
That's amazing. Bigger spot?
Slightly bigger? Yeah. But really big patio.
Really big patio.
Very Texas-sized patio.
Oh, my God. Liquor license?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Oh, and in the works. It's all in the works.
Of course. It's always in the works.
Yeah.
That'll be nice. And same hours, or is it going to be like, I guess with beer, you have a more of a
night
time?
We'll see.
Oh, so you got some plans.
We'll see. I don't know yet.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Listen, I want to thank you for having Heritage come in. I also want to thank you for having a place where my wife, who I think introduced me to this place,
smart lady,
can come and hang out. I mean, honestly, like, we'll hang out here outside, and then we'll go to the vet, and the vet will be like, did I see you at home state? Like, it feels like a community, very much a community here. But yeah, my wife and we have had many, many loving breakfast taco dates.
Aww.
Or we'll get it to be postmated if we're a little too long in the tooth from the night before.
Yeah. Postmates and home states.
Postmates and home states is like a winning combination.
It is.
That has been a lifesaver. Like two, when I'm like, I can randomly be like, it's a 3 taco, 2 Topo Chico type of night.
Yep.
On a Sunday morning.
Yep.
Just lay on the couch and just like wrap myself in all that warmth.
It served a lot of people well, that delivery.
That's awesome. and so where can people find you online?
Well, our Instagram is called Home State.
I don't know.
Pretty easy.
You must have bribed the people on Instagram with, like, endless breakfast tacos.
Well, I think the person that had it before had one follower and one post.
So oh, that like thing where someone's just holding it.
Yeah, so it was easy. Like, hey, can we have that? I said, sure.
Awesome.
And then our website is myhomestate.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Everyone from whoever lived in Texas and now lives here, thanks you. And we have an awesome track from She Keeps Bees, which has one of my favorite breakdowns ever from Heritage. We'll be right back with some live music. This is Darren. I'm going to go eat 9 tacos.
Try and change it. Better know what you want. Remember how he's changed your mind before. Long as I have waited to know the crust of you, swirling everything around me as if I make you my moon.
Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing is a celebration of good food and beverages in the newly restored Barn Loft event venue at Nettle Meadow Farm in Thurman, New York. On Saturday, June 18th, come sample and savor, then buy your favorite cheeses and beverages to take home. Nettle Meadow cheeses have been praised highly in national media and have won prestigious awards from the American Cheese Society. Taste samples of goat and sheep cheeses paired with an array of local regional wines, beers, and ciders. You'll never forget your first sample of rich, creamy Kunik, Nettle Meadow's trademark cheese. In Esquire, our very own Ann Saxelby said, "Kunik, it may very well be the sexiest cheese in the USA." Nettle Meadow Farm is a goat and sheep dairy and cheese company in Thurman, New York, just below Crane Mountain in the Adirondacks, between Gore Mountain, North Creek, and Warrensburg. It's owned and operated by Lorraine Limbiase and Sheila Flanagan. Both have a great love of animals, artisan cheese, and the unique challenges of farm life. Nettle Meadow Farm was originally founded in 1990, and it's the home of over 300 goats, dozens of sheep, and a variety of farm sanctuary animals. Again, the cheese and spirits pairing is Saturday, June 18th. For more information and tickets, visit nettlemeadowcheeseandspirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, meadowcheeseandspirits.com.
Welcome back. We have the Undercover Dream Lovers live in studio. Welcome, guys.
Thanks. Thanks for having us, man.
Thanks for letting me crawl over all your gear in here. I mean, by count, I see like 2,023 petals. Am I close?
I think you're a little short. Yeah. I would count again. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We're gonna take a quick pause. We're gonna do this. You want to go around the room and introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name is Matt Koenig, and I started the project wrote a bunch of this, wrote the songs, and play guitar and sing.
I'm Galen. I just play guitar.
Well, don't just play guitar.
No, I just play guitar.
Okay, just plays guitar.
Just a guitar player.
Okay, just a guitar player.
We've got just a keyboard player over here.
Okay.
Yeah, my name's John Paul.
Okay.
And, hey, and I'm Shane,
and
I play bass.
Oh, okay. It's always interesting to kind of hear the process of how something goes from like a solo bedroom-esque project and how that kind of gets started, and then how it evolves into having just a guitar player and just a key player and just a bass player added in. But like, what was the kind of process of evolving this from one man to multiple men?
It's been pretty fast-paced. The project, like, I was away from music for a few years, and finally got to like recording 5 songs. I spontaneously like threw it together in like a 2-week period, and kind of getting the guys together was really fast too. We had a show booked at Babies All Right, and like just spread the word, and we're like, let's find a drummer, let's find a keyboard player, let's find a guitar player. And
when you say let's, is that like the royal we?
Well, I guess I always speak in we.
Oh, okay.
Personally, I have a tendency to be like, we should do this. And I mean, like, can you do this for me? So I have a tendency to use that.
Okay,
that,
I just want to clarify.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Right, but I've actually got 2 guys. This is actually a 6-piece for the live show, and I have 2 drummers, too. An electronic drummer and an acoustic drummer, but they are absent because of previous engagements, so we put a robot to work tonight.
That's fine.
Yeah,
we have a lot of robots on this show.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, how does, I mean, what are you essentially looking for when you're when it goes from royal we to collective we?
Right. So when I do it in my room, when I started everything, it was mostly me just wanting to get something that I could take it from royal we to collective we. I like just wanted to be out playing, but I had no material, and I just decided I needed to make something. So I did it really fast, and I didn't like think, oh, this is going to be good for this guy to play or that guy to play. I just knew I needed to put some songs together so I could get out there and like be doing it in person. So I was like, what's the fastest way? Just throw all these ideas at the wall, throw all of these songs on the table, and then everyone here is so talented, they just came in, the parts were already done, so they're like, sick, this is easy, we can just play this.
And when the parts being done, I mean, obviously, you know, since you're playing everything on the EP, when you bring in other people, is there room for interpretation, or is it just like a straightforward, like, this is how I wrote it, please play?
Oh,
it
no,
like
definitely. Like, I always encourage people to come in and bring their take and touch. Some guys like to stick to it, but I'm like, let's make this different too. I didn't like initially have like the grand vision figured out starting the first EP. And I just wanted to get going and have fun and play. But now, as like we've gotten through that, I've kind of realized that I can like be more controlling with that and have more of a vision. And like maybe I'll tell some parts in mine, or maybe I'll work with them on new parts. But this was pretty cut and dry. And like, let's work with this basic idea. Maybe we change up some drum parts. Maybe we change up some key synth sounds. I didn't actually have any of the keyboard parts like saved, because I would work so fast. I would work on one synth part and like not be sure if it was going to stay in the song, so I just worked to the next one, and we'd have to like recreate all those sounds anyway.
Gotta get a good synth guy for that.
Yeah, that's true.
Can we hear a song?
Yeah, definitely.
What's the name of the first one?
This first track's called The Master, and it's off the first EP, While It's in Style.
Like you, man.
I can't get over this amp that you guys brought. Like, please tell me, for those who can't see it because it's radio, it's a beautifully hand-painted amp with, like, a pyramid and a sunscape and, like, desert mountains of moon. And just, it's one of the coolest amps I've ever seen.
I bought the thing right before I went on a road trip and stopped in Savannah to see some friends. I went to SCAD and just had a bunch of weird art students go nuts on the thing. Because it was just too plain before.
That's just the guitar player.
Just guitar. So it's like not like a custom amp company, just like a bunch of friends drawing on it?
No, it's just a Vox AC-15, pretty standard stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, maybe give them a heads up that they could definitely like do something with it. Well, I know you sent the call out for the bands, but like, how did you end up meeting each other? Like, as you kind of like layer the personalities together, like, how did that all kind of come about?
Through my best friend and manager, she really pushed me to reach out to some guys who were doing music. I just started working with these guys, Shane and Galen, and knew they had some projects going on the side. And she was like, you know, you got to get this rolling. Just reach out to them, even if they're just filling in. And then like we just started putting it together. It was working really well, and we just kept going with it. It's been like a blast ever since.
So will this kind of change the future way of like writing? Is it now a band, or is it still a solo project? Does it go back to the Royal Week?
Yeah, it's still... So it's been back to the Royal Week because I've, like... I've been working on a lot of new tracks at my place, trying to figure out what I want to do next. Like I said, the first five songs were, like, spontaneous, really quick, like, just get something out there. I'd rather... in the future, instead of just writing five songs and putting out five songs, write like 10 or 20 songs and choose like what I think is the best and the most clear and cohesive and like conceptually together, like a full idea. So I'm like just writing as much as I can, and I think the guys have been in a few times to my place like helping out, and it's still brand new ideas, but I think it's we play by ear a lot. I definitely do. My pace is go with the flow for sure. Mm. I like to bring in other people's inspiration and ideas, and that's for me how I learn everything that I've learned. I'm super open eared. I'm like a sponge. So yeah, definitely gonna have some influence from these guys down the line.
I know you mentioned babies, but where are some of the other favorite places to play around town?
Well, for me, I'm with this project so new to it. We played at Bowery Electric and Transpicos and Babies, and that's really it for the project.
New.
Yeah, super new. I wrote the songs in October. We put the band together a month before the first show, and that was April 8th, which is like not long ago at all.
No, it's not. I mean, it's a very short time window. So we're like kind of living this in... There's not even like that much time to ask that many questions.
No, yeah, it's so.
Have you had any experience yet that will like eventually go on to become like band lore? So when you do radio, like 2 years down the line, like early days, we had this crazy thing happen to us, or is it still too new?
Well, I mean, I don't know. All of our practices are pretty like. So I didn't have a space, and Shane has a space, and we use that, and we have so much gear, as you can see, like stumbling over it. The thing is, a lot of the guys didn't know each other, and we pulled them together, and had I had a space that we just showed up, we, like, probably wouldn't have, like, gotten to know each other as well if we didn't have to, like, lug all of my amps and gear down four flights of stairs for, like, every single practice. Like, set up was, like, as much, if not more, time than practicing for us. So that's definitely going to be remembered until I get a space.
Okay. Can we hear another song?
Yeah, totally.
What are you going to play for us?
So this next track isn't out yet, and it's one that I will probably be coming out next. It's all recorded and stuff, but I'm working on some mixing, and it's called All You Need.
I have done this.
really like the name of the band. Where did it come from?
Oh, yeah. So I, like, was out of town for, like, 3 months around Thanksgiving, staying with my folks. And I was... songs were done. I had just written them. I knew I wanted to come back and get playing. But hardest part, I still did not have the band name. And I was, like, thinking of everything, writing... before I left, writing so many names down on my phone, and, like, nothing was sticking. And it was, like, a really late night, and my mom always has this... she's got, like, all these weird teas, and she has this valerian root tea, and I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it's, like, it knocks you out, and before it knocks you out, you kind of, like, get really loopy, and if you're not tired, you get in this weird, disoriented headspace, like kind of like a lucid dream. And, so I had some valerian root tea, the weird headspace, and I was just thinking of names still. And I had, like, pillow over my face and, like, just thinking, and Undercover Dream Lovers popped into my head. And it was one of those moments where I'm like, I should write this down right now. And I almost didn't because I was so tired. I'm like, just do it. So luckily, I got myself up and, like, just wrote it on my phone. And next day was like, this is sick, this flows, I just... really liked it, so yeah.
It's really, I mean, it rhymes and it just sounds so nice. I feel like there could be just a good piece on just like how bands got their names, but yeah. I've not heard the valerian root tea method yet.
It's very one of a kind.
So I know that you're working on the next kind of batch of songs, but any tours? What's coming up this summer?
We want to play in, we have some things set up in Philly, and we're working on some DC. We just want to hit up, like, the local cities and towns nearby while we're still, like, creating the initial, like, vibe and still figuring out what it is. But no, like, set path. We will be in Philly, I believe it's July 8th. And that's at, what's the name of the place?
Kung Fu
Necktie. No, we're not Kung Fu Necktie.
We are playing?
No.
Bourbon? Bourbon and Branch?
Bourbon and Branch? That's
well,
it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Ripco gives a thumbs up.
That's our manager behind the screen, like, the one. We have, like, a really organized email thread, but my memory sucks, so.
Well, we want to make sure we have time for one more song, but, where can people get the EP? Where can they
kind
of get all the information?
The internet. But,
it's a wide place. Narrow it down.
SoundCloud will definitely get you some of the songs downloaded on Bandcamp. We have a website, theundercoverdreamlovers.com. And, you can check us out there. Lots of cool photos, like all that stuff, which we've done all ourselves, which is really DIY to the max. We've, like, put everything together ourselves. So go check it out. Hopefully you guys like it.
Awesome. Big shout out to Remy, who put me in touch with you guys. Really appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for coming on the show, The Collective We.
Oh, yes.
And we will be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes. What's the name of the last song?
This one's Love the Tune.
Okay. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.